Okay, let's close the eyes. Sitting up just comfortably tall. Let's recite Om three times now. Take a deep breath in. We'll do the invocation to Patanjali, so you can either just read the screen, or if you just want to listen in, you can close the eyes and listen in, or follow along with the screen. Okay, this is the invocation to sage Patanjali. So, inhale. Yogena chittasya padena vacha malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena Yopakarotam pravaram uninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. Let's open the eyes. And Nikola, you want to read the meaning loud? Sure. English translation? Yeah. Just read it out.
Respectfully bow down with folded hands and offer my salutations to Sage Patanjali, the highest among the munis, who has presented remedies for removing the impurities of the body through his treatise on Ayurveda. Language through his treatise on grammar, it is Patanjali Mahabhashya, and the impurities of the chitta mind field through his treatise on yoga, that is Yoga Sutras of Patanjali.
Very good. So again, just a quick repetition. Patanjali is credited with three things for us, the most important of three things, right? We always talk about body, speech and mind. Okay, so he gave us a remedy for the impurities of all these three, body, mind and the speech. Body, to purify the body, he gave us Ayurveda, which is the science of medicine, Ayurveda. And he wrote the most authoritative and most authentic commentary on the Sanskrit grammar called Mahabhashya. That's the most respected commentary on grammar. So he gave us the technique to cleanse the speech. Grammar is to clean the speech. And then he gave us Yoga Sutras, which is to purify the mind. Okay? So that's why he's, you know, whenever we study Patanjali in any form, we usually recite this invocation. That's a common. Okay? So, like I said, Yoga Sutras is not an easy topic to understand, and even harder to explain to somebody, especially when you don't understand it very well. Right? So, but we've been making some effort here. We keep recognizing wherever we have difficulty understanding, we recognize and kind of flag it, and I go back and research some more and see if I can understand it, and things like that. That's how it has been going. All right, so. Now, there are several people who are here for the first time. So Yoga Sutras is a text which has four chapters. Some of you are aware of that. So Samadhi Pada, Sadhana Pada, etc. There are four chapters. We're currently in the chapter number 2, but what we did was we did not go through the whole thing in a sequence. Like, we didn't go through one chapter 1, sutra 1, and then sutra 2 and all that. That's not how we did that. In my own understanding, I kind of divided the whole text into categories or topics for discussion, and then I went according to that in my sequence of you know, these classes. So we first did the first chapter, a few sutras from the first chapter to try to understand the definition of yoga, and then we went through, you know, it's much easier to go immediately to the 8 limbs of yoga, so we switched and jumped to the 8 limbs of yoga. And as a part of the 8 limbs of yoga, we went through a lot of discussion on some of the concepts that are even, I had to go back to chapter 1 and then do some studies there, etc. So it's kind of been back and forth. So that's how we've been doing it. And now in chapter 2, it usually is a full sequence. So we start with chapter 2, sutra number 1, and then go through in a sequence until we come to the 8 limbs of yoga, and then we stop there. Okay, and we're getting close there now. So we're coming to the close of this whole series of talks on the sutras. We started almost like a year and a half ago now. Okay, so we're now toward the tail end of this discussion to understand the concept of the sutras. Okay, so what did we discuss so far in... Chapter 2, you know, what we'll do is, we are currently on, does anybody remember what sutra we are on now?
19.
So we are going to do 19 today. We were up to 18 last time. Okay. So what I'm going to do is to kind of very quickly run through these sutras up to 18, and just to give you a flavor, you won't understand much. But we'll just go through them quickly, all right? Just to kind of catch up on the background of the information. Okay? So this is the sutra number 1. It talks about the concept of Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga is the name. It's not the same as the Self-Realization Fellowship Kriya Yoga. They have a very different concept of Kriya Yoga, all right? When I'm pointing this way, the last building is Self-Realization Fellowship in this building. Okay, anybody heard of that organization? There is an organization called the Self-Realization Fellowship. Started by Swami...
Just saw the board.
Yes. Started by Swami Yogananda. Anybody heard the name Yogananda? Yes. Anybody heard there? There's a very well-known book written by him called The Autobiography of a Yogi. Anybody heard that book? Okay, if you haven't, you should read that book just for its interesting nature of the book. You've read that, Sona?
Yeah.
It's an interesting book. Okay, and then he established this organization called the SRF, or the Self-Realization Fellowship, and that's in the last building in this row. And their main practice is also called Kriya Yoga. Okay, but we are not talking of that Kriya Yoga. This is just the combination of these three elements: tapas, swadhyaya, ishvara pranidhana. Tapa is austerities or toughening up. Swadhyaya is study of the self or study of the scriptures. And ishvara pranidhana is the ability to or desire to surrender to a higher entity called Ishvara or God. You can call it God. So when you combine these three, then Patanjali says these three, when you practice them together in some form, that practice is called Kriya Yoga. And the purpose of this Kriya Yoga is twofold. What are the two things that it does? It does Samadhi Bhavana, okay, and Klesha Tanu Karana. In Sanskrit, those are the two terms he uses. Samadhi Bhavana means it brings you close to Samadhi. Samadhi is what? Samadhi now? What is Samadhi? enlightenment, close to enlightenment. Samadhi is the last stage of enlightenment. Okay. So it says samadhi bhavana, that means it brings you close to samadhi, brings you that attitude of mind where you are almost close to samadhi. And then klesha tanukarana. Klesha means, we'll come to that right now, klesha is suffering. Klesha is all the suffering, afflictions, pain, etc. And tanukarana means to diminish, to dwindle down, diminish, reduce, eliminate sometimes even, you know, depending on how far you can diminish it. Okay. So the purpose of Kriya Yoga is to diminish the afflictions, all the suffering that we go through, the stresses and strains of life. So anybody who talks about stress, try these three first of all. What are the three? Tapas, Swadhyaya and Ishvara Pranidhana. Okay? So you have to practice all these three. Then only you can get rid of klesha, suffering, stress. Okay? That's what it is. You have to do that. Okay? And then of course, it brings you close to samadhi, which is the ultimate state before. So this is again, I always like to go through this picture because it shows us, you know, you were here this morning, right? So we talked about the four functions of the mind. That's how, you know, we pictorially depict the four functions of the mind. So the four functions of the mind are ego, the mind itself, which is the cognitive mind, intellect, and the memory. So if you look at these pictures, so there's intellect, there's mind, there's ego, and the memory. These are the four major basic functions of the mind. Okay, and then of course, on the other side of this, or the vertical line, there is the soul, or the purusha, or the seer. So this side is called the material aspect of being, which is prakriti, P-R-A-K-R-I-T-I, prakriti. And this side is the purusha, or the soul, or the atma, or self, etc., etc. Those are the words used. Okay. So this is an important concept to understand the four functions of the mind. Okay. Now, the term klesha was used. Klesha was used to mention all the afflictions, all the suffering and the stresses and strain that we go through. And Patanjali has listed these five categories or five causes. You can call them causes of klesha or categories of klesha. Okay. So what are these five? Again, in Sanskrit they are avidya. Avidya means ajnana, ignorance. Avidya is lack of proper understanding, lack of knowing. What are we lacking?
Knowledge,
true identity. Our true identity, who am I? I don't know what my true identity is, who am I in reality. I tend to identify myself with this body, mind, etc. But then there is something beyond all that, which is my true identity. And not knowing that is called avidya. And what does that do? Avidya leads to asmita. What is asmita? You can read the translation.
Ego.
Ego. Okay. Ego. What's ego? What's ego? What is the ego?
So how we perceive ourselves.
How we perceive ourselves, exactly, yes. Ego is how we perceive ourselves. So again it's a, she very rightly said the word perception. It's a perception, not reality. Ego tends to hide the reality and only believe in perceptions. Mm-hmm. That's it. And it builds its whole life around perceptions. I like it, I hate it, I dislike, I love it. These are the perceptions, right? And then it builds the entire life around those perceptions, hiding the reality. It doesn't want to look at the reality, because reality, if it comes up, ego has no role to play. It doesn't like it. So there is avidya, asmita, then there is raga and dvesha. Anybody know these terms, raga and dvesha? Raga means what?
Attachment.
Hmm?
Attachment.
attachment. Attachment, again, strong likes, something you really love and like, and you're attached to it, you have a desire for it, all that becomes raga. And dvesha is hatred or dislike or animosity, and all those words, dvesha. Again, strong dislike. So there is strong likes and strong dislikes, raga and dvesha. And finally, there is abhinivesha. The fifth one is abhinivesha. What is abhinivesha? The desire to cling to life or a fear of death. But it also loosely can be translated as fear of any change. The desire to maintain status quo. I'm happy where I am. I don't want any change. I don't want to see any change. Change always scares me. Because who knows what's going to happen? That's called abhinivesha. Okay? So these are the five categories of klesha or suffering. Okay? And what this simply saying, this statement here is that avidya, which is the ignorance or lack of understanding who I am, is the mother of all the other kleshas. That's all it's saying. It's the root cause of everything else that follows. Okay? So now this is defining what is avidya. Okay? So what it is saying is that avidya basically is it's not understanding who I am. Why does it happen? Because we are identifying something that is impermanent, something which is transitory with some, we think it is permanent. This life, for example, we never think of death, right? We always think, oh, I'm going to be like this all the time. Or this body, or this mind, you know, it's all temporary and transitory, but we believe it's permanent. And then we focus on this and identify with that as if it was the real thing. That's it. That's anitya and nitya. And shuchi is something which is not pure, but we think it is pure. This whole body, for example, you know, they gave the example of this body. How pure it is, how good it is. Everything that comes out of the body smells. Everything. It doesn't matter what it is. Inside, it's all filth. Right? That's how they explain this body. So, but we think it is the most beautiful thing. You know, paint here, paint there, this part, you know, get surgery done here, get surgery done here. Make it as good as it looks. And that's what we believe in. That's the reality for us. So it's not pure, but it is. We think it is pure and good and clean and everything else. We do the same thing. And then finally, the non-self, which we call the whole material body, we think that's the reality. We call that as the self. We don't recognize our true identity. That's what avidya is all about. All right? Okay? And what is asmita now? Asmita is the ego. Ego is not recognizing, same thing. Ego is confusing the reality with unreality. Okay? Now, the terms here used are all very Sankhya philosophy related terms. Okay? The drik term that's used here, drik is the one who is seeing or the observing, which is the self, which is the soul or the purusha or the atma. Okay? Darshana is the prakriti, which is being seen by the observer. So darshana means something that is seen. The confusion of not recognizing this difference, that's what leads to ego. Because now, ego takes over the responsibility of making all the decisions. It becomes powerful. It thinks that ego is everything. It starts identifying itself as the soul, as the self, as the whole consciousness. And that's what ego does. And then ego, once it has the control, it messes up the whole life. That's what causes stress. That's what causes all the suffering. That's what causes all the all these fears and phobias and anxiety and depression and everything. It's all based on that ego, which is taking over its responsibility. And what do we want? Like we said this morning, what we want is to sharpen the intellect. So when the intellect is sharp, we make positive decisions which are meaningful and beneficial for us. If we continue to let the ego make the decisions, no solution in life then. Stress is the only result. Okay? So that's the asmita or the ego. Then, what is raga? Sukhanushayi. So, once we have any pleasurable experience, we try to follow that. We try to hang on to it, and ego loves it, you know. Ego, when it has something pleasurable, oh, I say, this is it, you know. I don't care whether it's good or bad for me, but it's pleasurable, you know. This piece of candy or this piece of mithai, you know, all these sweets and everything, you know. Ego loves it because it gives a very pleasurable experience. Is it good for you? Who cares? I don't care. But the ego loves it. So it goes and follows it. That's why anushayi means follow. Anushayi means to follow and then kind of tag along with it. Okay? And then dukha anushayi dveshaha. Dukha means unpleasant. There is something painful. Dukha. Dukha is a common term in Indian languages.
Being sad. In grief. Yeah.
Grief, pain, suffering, all dukkha. Right? So when you have a painful experience, okay, then that is, if you follow that experience, then that will cause dvesha or strong dislike. Okay, so what follows pleasurable experience is raga or attachment or strong like for it. Attachment, desire. And what follows a very unpleasant or painful experience is dvesha, or dislike, or animosity, or something like that. Okay? Everyone got that?
So, can you have a pleasurable experience without getting attached to it?
Yeah, no, that's the idea. That's
okay.
The idea.
All right.
You have a pleasurable experience, but don't get attached to it.
Right. Okay.
Enjoy it while it's there.
Right.
Absolutely. No, Patanjali doesn't say don't enjoy your cup of tea or coffee. No.
Okay. I'm just a little confused by that.
No, just don't get attached to it.
Yeah. And grief too. You know, everybody's going to feel grief.
Yes.
Don't get attached to it.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
That's exactly right. You know, we used to, in our discussion group, we used to have a lot of discussion on this, and eventually we realized that nobody says here that don't enjoy life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Enjoy everything. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your food, enjoy your vacation, enjoy your family, everything, but don't get attached to nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Even though Patanjali at one point says everything is painful eventually. even something that you think is painful eventually even what you think is pleasurable is eventually painful. Well, that will come to that later. Okay? All right. Nabhinivesha is fear of death. And what it's saying here is that even the most learned person, no matter how much learned a person is, they're all afraid of death. Even though they know technically or theoretically, the death is not a permanent thing. It's a temporary stop-gap arrangement in life. Death is nothing but a stop-gap arrangement. That's how the yoga philosophy looks at it. Because there is reincarnation, there's rebirth after death. So death is only a stop-gap thing. It happens and then again you come back, again it happens. It's okay. Nothing serious about it. But then even if you're learning and know that theoretically, you're still afraid of death. That's what it is saying. Okay. Now, so what he's saying is there are different categories of these kleshas. They can be sukshma or sthula. Sukshma means at a very subtle level. You know, these kleshas, they could be hidden deep inside your subconscious levels, deep inside, which may not come to surface right away, but they are deep inside. And when they come to surface, they give you more pain. They were hidden there for a long time. Like they say, when you it erupts, bubbles out, it gives you more pain. You know, if you have something hidden in your mind and you're holding on to it, suddenly a trigger comes and you erupt. Everyone experienced that, right? No?
Not yet.
Not yet. You never erupted in anger or anything?
Maybe you don't know. She don't know.
She doesn't know, okay. Somebody is there who knows.
She's so young.
Yeah. No, these things happen, right?
What if you have teenagers?
Right.
Wait till you have teenagers.
No, you know, it's everyone has gone through. Even teenagers go through that. It's not that they don't. They just don't recognize that. That's okay. Okay. So there are subtle ones, and then there are not so subtle kleshas. So what this statement is saying is that these subtle ones can be eliminated by bringing them back to their source, pratiprasava. It's like putting the newborn baby back into the womb. That's what pratiprasava means. So wherever you came from, put it back there. Okay, we talked about this whole concept of evolution from Purusha to Prakriti, and I don't want to go through that again because we've done that a few times. But someday we'll talk about that. Okay, so there is a whole concept of evolution of these 23 elements. They are called tattvas. Okay, and then there is a whole process of evolution, and there is a process of, they call it devolution, going back to the source. The whole idea of yoga is to go back to the source, so that you can go and merge back with the source, and then you have no more suffering, no more pain, no more klesha, okay, no stress anymore. Okay, so these very subtle ones, he says, can be eliminated if you know how to go back to the source, merge back with the source. And those that are not so subtle, okay, can be eliminated even by just a simple meditation practice. You know, when we talk of meditation, it also has multiple stages of meditation. Patanjali talks about 7 different stages of samadhi. Okay? So what he's saying here is that the very initial state of meditation, when you can deepen that state of meditation, the ones which are not very subtle, but they are gross in nature. They're on the surface itself, you know, those suffering. Just worrying about them every day, you know. But they can be calmed just by practicing meditation. Deeper level of meditation, not just sitting and chanting your mantra for one day and you think you'll be done. No. That doesn't happen. Do most of you meditate on a regular basis? No? Just started, okay. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, no, meditation takes a long time to find or see real impact of it. So that's what this is saying, okay. So the subtle ones, you have to work hard on them. And the more gross ones, you can sit and meditate and hopefully they'll reduce their impact. So what is saying this here is that these kleshas, because of these kleshas, these 5 elements, we engage in action because there is a desire to do something, there is a desire for something, or there is hatred for something, so we engage in action. And this action results in karma phala, or the result of action, samskara as it's called. And therefore, they eventually become, you know, does everyone know at least the term karma, karma theory? The whole doctrine or the philosophy of karma? At simplistic level, good deeds will lead you to good results, bad deeds will result, take you to bad results. Everyone kind of knows that. That's the very fundamental concept in Hindu philosophy.
Whatever we do
will come back to you, right? As you sow, so shall you reap, as they say in English. Okay? So that's the fundamental concept in Hindu philosophy, is the concept of rebirth, and it's all based on karma theory. Karma means the action, as well as the result of action, as well as the impressions that are left in the mind, in the memory. They are all called karma. So depending on the context, karma can have multiple meanings. Okay? So what we do and what we think, that's called karma. And the impression that it leaves, that's also called, they are called samskara, but they are all part of the karma bag. It's called karmashaya. That's the term he is using. No, yeah, karmashaya. Karmashaya is the bag of the samskaras that we carry from life to life, from birth to birth, from one life to the next, etc. Karmashaya. So what it's saying is that the phala or the fruit of our action, whatever we do now, will be experienced in this life or in a future life. That's what this statement is saying. It's kind of reaffirming the whole concept of reincarnation. Okay? That whatever we do, whatever karma we do, its result will be experienced in drishta. Drishta means seen, or this life. Or adrishta means not seen, which is a future life. Okay? And future life doesn't mean the very next life. Who knows what I'll be in the next life? Next life I could be a dog or an animal or an insect. When you're a dog or an animal or insect, you don't experience your karmas. It's only when you are in human form, you will go back to experiencing your karma. Again, that's all based on Indian philosophy. Okay? Okay, so what does it result in? How does it impact this karma? All right. The result or the fruit is experienced in three things: jati, ayuhu, and bhoga. Jati, ayu, and bhoga. Three things will be determined by your karmas. What is jati? What's jati? Yes, species of life, whether you'll be born as a human being, animal, insect, bird, or whatever.
Is that, if you do go back to being a bird or something, is that your punishment because you can't?
It's a punishment in the sense that it's based on some of the karmas that you did earlier. But so what they are saying is, it's a very, again, nobody understands these things very clearly, I don't. All I'm repeating is what I've read, you know, what my understanding through these books is. What they're saying is that you will either earn more karma or dilute your karma only in the human life form. When you are in any form which is non-human, you do not accrue karma or you don't burn the karma. You are sent there to finish that karma that was given to you at that birth. Then you come back to next life, whichever it could be. That will depend on your whole karma back. Okay?
I've never heard of this, but can like a person, do you know, like in the Hindu philosophy, go from like a human to a plant?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I'm not sure of plants. They don't generally talk about plant life.
Right, but...
But I don't know.
Okay.
That's a good question. Okay. I've never read that so far.
Okay, I never read it either. Mostly like from animals.
Everything else which has a, you know, movement.
Like a heartbeat.
Okay, so that's what it is. So jati is the species of life. Okay. And in the common Indian concept, jati also means whether you are a male or a female, or there are other meanings associated with jati. Anybody have heard the term jati? Right, right. So anything, it could mean any one of those things, basically. What is ayu? Ayu means the span of life. How long are you going to live in that life? So whether if you're an insect, how long is your life going to be? A few seconds or a few minutes or who knows? All right, ayu. And bhoga, what's bhoga? Bhoga means what kind of experiences are you going to have? What kind of life experiences are you going to have? Pleasant, unpleasant, good, bad, all those things. So those are three things that will be determined by your karma bag. Karmashaya. Okay? And again, it's same thing. If you do good deeds, you'll get good results. If you do bad deeds, you'll get bad results. That's all it's saying. Okay? So if you do punya means good deeds, then you'll get halada, which is pleasant feelings, pleasant results. And paritapa is painful experiences if you do a punya. Does everyone get that? Punya will give you pleasant experience. A punya or bad deeds will give you bad experience. That's all it is saying. Very standard philosophy in India. But this is the one which had us confused for a very long time. But because it's saying that for a person who has realized, who has understood the life, who has become somewhat realized, self-realized, everything is painful. No matter how pleasant it feels now, but it eventually ends up in being pain. Okay? So you need to reflect on this sutra. I'm not going to spend too much time. We have spent enough time on this. Okay? All right. This is an interesting sutra. It says, the pain that has not yet come, that is avoidable. Okay? The pain that has already come, you've already experienced it, you can do nothing about it. And the pain that you're currently going through, it already has initiated its course. You probably have to go through the course unless you become self-realized doing this during this time. But you can avoid future suffering. Okay, how does that happen? Well, first of all, what is the cause of suffering? The cause of suffering, he says, is the perceived union between Purusha, or the soul, and the Prakriti and the material universe. That we just said that earlier. If the ego takes over, then ego believes that it is the boss, it is the supreme, it is the soul. And that in that sense, they have merged. The real soul and this artificial soul have kind of merged together. They have become one. Now we cannot distinguish between the two. So that's called Sanyoga. Sanyoga means union. So when there's union happening between the true self and the material aspect of our being, which is the mind-body-intellect complex, and when the ego takes over, basically, then we result in suffering. So that's why it says that pain that we talked about, which is avoidable, that pain is the result of this combination, this union of Purusha and Prakriti. Okay? So that's the statement here. And then started talking about the whole concept of Prakriti. This is the whole material being now. First he's going to focus a couple of sutras on the whole material aspect of being called Prakriti. So now, Purusha and Prakriti, you get a feel for it? Not quite. You get it. Purusha and Prakriti. Get some feel for it. What is Purusha? Atma, soul, yes. Purusha is the soul, Atma, self. Self with a capital S. Okay? That's Purusha. And what is Prakriti? This whole material being, which is, we are a part of that. This whole body, mind, my thoughts, my feelings, everything is Prakriti. Okay? And the other concept that we talked about is that in the yoga philosophy, what Patanjali says, that the only thing that has consciousness is Purusha. Atma is the only conscious element. Okay? The material being, Prakriti, has no consciousness. Our buddhi, our intellect, our mind, they have no consciousness. They function based on borrowed or reflected consciousness from the Purusha. Okay? So that's something that you have to keep in mind. Okay, so this is a very important sutra, and this will be referenced in many, many other future sutras also. Okay? So, again, we discussed this at length last time, but let me just spend another few minutes on this one now. So what it is saying is, how do you characterize this prakriti, this material aspect of being? What are the characteristics of this prakriti? That's what it is all about. First thing it says, that prakash, kriya and sthiti. So those are the three terms used here to denote three gunas. And has anybody heard the term three gunas? What are the three gunas?
Sattva, rajo, tamas.
Sattva, rajas and tamas. Tamo guna, rajo guna and sattva guna. Who has not heard these terms? You're not familiar with them. Okay. You are okay with them?
You told me them last time.
Okay. So now you're okay. You never heard of them. So what they say is that this whole material being, entity, is a composite of these three gunas. We are nothing but these three gunas. Okay. Gunas is like a property or a characteristic. The three gunas are sattva, rajas and tamas. Sattva means purity, kindness, goodness, everything that is peaceful, that's sattva, under the category of sattva. Okay? Rajas means there is action involved, activity involved. Activity, ambition, desire, I have to get there. I have to become the CEO of this company, you know, that kind of a thing, you know, when you have in the mind, that's all driven by rajas. And tamas is nothing but dullness, sleepiness, lethargy, negative, totally negative thoughts, thoughts like, oh, I want to kill somebody, I want to steal something, you know, those are the thoughts that are tinged with tamas and rajas. It's a combination of rajas and tamas. Okay? So everything in this material being is a combination, is a collection of these three gunas. And at any given time, one of these gunas will be dominant and the others will be less dominant. The human mind works the same way. The food works the same way. Our thoughts and emotions work the same way. Everything. Okay? So you know, just to give a quick example, I'm just assuming that when you decided to come for this class, probably the sattva guna was more dominant. When you sat in the car, rajas became more dominant. Okay, when you go back home, all you want to do is to sit and watch some TV, that will be tamas taking over. Okay, so that's how you can kind of look at these things. But these gunas, they shift their dominance from moment to moment, you know. So at one moment, tamas could be more dominant, at the other moment, rajas could be more dominant, etc., etc. It all depends on your situation in life at that time. So, So that's one thing he says. Prakash, Kriya and Sthiti. Prakash is Sattva, Kriya is action or Rajas, and Sthiti is stability or not moving anything, or lethargy. That's called Tamas. Okay, so those are the three terms used for the elements. Now the second is Bhuta and Indriya. Okay, Bhuta is all the elements. Bhuta, Pancha Mahabhuta. Have anybody heard the term Mahabhuta? Earth, water, air, fire, ether. Five elements. They are called the Bhuta. And Indriyas are all the organs of the body. Okay, so multiple Indriyas. How many indriyas do we have? How many organs do we have? Usually they list 11. 11 organs. What are these? Five.
The legs, hands.
Right, legs, hands and all this. So they are called organs of action. They are called karma indriya. Karma is action, right? The karma indriya are the five organs of action. So what are these five? You just started listing them.
Legs.
Legs is one. Hands is one. That's number two.
The mouth.
Tongue is the number three.
The eyes.
There's no action.
You got to see, right?
That's perception.
Organs of knowledge.
Perception. We're talking of organs of action. So legs, locomotion. Hands, lifting, throwing, kicking, and throwing, etc. Speech for abusing somebody, you know, saying harsh words to people. And then there are two others, which is called the organs of elimination and organs of reproduction. Okay? Get that? Organs of elimination and reproduction. So these are the five, they are called karma indriya, organs of action. And then there are five organs of perception, which are, you know that. What are these?
The eyes, ears,
nose, and all that. Okay, skin, etc. So, five organs of perception. And for all these to function, the 11th organ is, they function only in conjunction with the 11th organ, which is called the mind. Without mind, none of these function, right? Otherwise, they are just instruments. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mind is the one which helps us process any information that comes through these organs. So, mind is the 11th organ. Okay? But it also includes the five senses, the sense of smell, touch, taste, and all that. They are not even listed here, but they are a part of this prakriti. Okay? And they are listed elsewhere. Okay. Now the purpose of prakriti, it says, again, this is one sutra which is very loaded. And if you read some of the commentaries, the commentators have spent almost like 15, 20 pages just on this sutra, minimum. More in some cases, depending on the author. Because what it says now, because they spend a lot of pages in explaining what the gunas are, then what these indriyas are, you know, what these organs are. And then finally the purpose. Purpose is bhoga and apavarga. Two purposes of this, of the whole prakriti. What are the two purposes? Bhoga and apavarga. All right. What's bhoga?
Experiences
of life. All kinds of experiences based on our day-to-day life. Every moment is an experience. Every moment in our life is an experience. And every experience has its own memory etched in our memory bank. Every experience gets deposited in our memory. Okay, that all becomes a part of our experience. So that's bhoga. And experiences could be good, bad, pleasant, unpleasant, ugly, etc., etc. All these things. So whatever we experience through the five senses, or we experience as a part of our memory, we pull stuff from memory That is an experience. We can get angry just by thinking of something we did, you know, 20 years ago. We can get jealous. We can get all kinds of emotional outbursts just by thinking. That's an experience. That's bhoga. Okay? So the purpose of all these elements of prakriti is to give you life's experiences. And what is apavarga?
Liberation.
Liberation from?
Suffering.
Very true. Liberation from suffering. Liberation also implies self-realization, because then only when we have no suffering we can be self-realized. So the purpose of prakriti, purpose of this material universe becomes twofold. That's when we say of prakriti, it usually refers to the buddhi or the intellect, because intellect is the most high level functional element in the whole prakriti, the highest level. Okay, so the purpose of buddhi or the prakriti is to provide experiences of life, as well as provide, eventually help us understand who we truly are, which is realization of my true identity, self-realization. That's apavarga. That's the Sanskrit name for this. And drishyam is just the name, another name for prakriti.
So how do you know when you achieve self-realization?
When you can... No, it's not... at least through words I can tell you, all this means is that you have no pain or no suffering of any kind. Nothing bothers you in life. Your house burns out, nothing bothers you. Okay? No pain, basically. You just said that, no suffering.
Okay.
So, you lose your most dearest one in the life, no suffering, no pain, uh-huh. Then you have self-realized. Until then, we're not.
Okay. Right.
You know, like I mentioned, this whole philosophy of yoga by Patanjali is based on a more ancient philosophy called Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya philosophy. Okay. And there it says in the very second sutra in the Sankhya philosophy that the purpose of this philosophy of the Sankhya yoga is to eliminate suffering. That's what it says. Just the same word that you used.
But suffering, I guess, means... Okay, if you lose somebody, you're going to feel grief. I mean, that's normal. But you're just not going to be attached to that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really the no attachment.
Right. That's right. The highest level of non-attachment.
Okay.
Highest level of non-attachment is self-realization.
Okay.
You know, they all say that you have to start distinguishing between pain and suffering.
Right.
Pain is unavoidable.
Because I remember reading that. Right.
Pain is unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
Suffering is avoidable.
Mm-hmm.
Suffering is caused by our own self. Suffering is by choice. Pain is not by choice.
Mm-hmm.
You meet with an accident, your leg is, you know, you're amputated or whatever. That's not your choice. That just happened. It's going to give you pain. You're going to cry. That's okay. But suffering, on top of that, that's your choice. Oh my God, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to my life, my wife, my kids, and how am I going to support all that? And I'm miserable, and this and that, and you go into depression, and that's all caused by your own self. That's avoidable, totally. So we talk about pain and suffering in that sense. Okay. Okay, so that's how far we went last time. Okay, so we move on to the next one now. Number 19. Okay. I'm recording all this, so.
Wonderful.
So if you ever decide to listen to this, you will be hearing that sound. Okay. All right. So you're going to repeat after me. Vishesha.
Vishesha.
Avishesha.
Avishesha.
Linga matra.
Linga matra.
Alingani. Guna Parvani. Okay, one more time. Vishesha.
Vishesha.
Avishesha.
Avishesha.
Linga matra.
Linga matra.
Alingani.
Alingani.
Guna Parvani.
Guna Parvani.
Okay. Vishesha means something which is specific. Important also, specific mostly, right? Something that is more particular, more specific, more important, you can call it, yes. Avishesha, not so specific, more general purpose, avishesha. So specific or non-specific, avishesha. Linga matra, what's linga?
Defined. Which one did you say?
Linga.
It says defined.
Defined.
Means present. Manifest.
That's what you have up there.
Yeah, but I don't like that. That's from Sachidananda's book. Some of the words that he translates, I don't like them. They're not very authentic, in my opinion. I don't know. He must have had something in mind while translating them. Linga is usually a symbol or a pointer to something. You know, when you point to something, you call it the linga.
Kind of identity.
It's a form of identity, right? So, when we say Shiva Linga, it's a symbol of Shiva. It's a symbolic representation of Shiva. Okay. So, linga means a pointer or a symbolic view of something. Defined? Not sure. See, I wrote these many years ago when I was just reading only the, you know, I was just looking at the translation by Swami Sachidananda, so I just copied everything there. But now if I were to do it alone again, I would add my own words to these. Linga matra means only. Matra means it's only a symbol. Symbolic only or a pointer only. That's linga matra. And alinga means absolutely no pointer, absolutely no symbol involved, no indicator involved. That's alinga.
Undetectable matter.
Yeah, Brian calls it distinctive and indistinctive.
Yeah, that's a little it's more, better. Yeah. Slightly better, yeah. Again, like I always add, you know, what you're getting here is my understanding of these concepts, right? Good or bad, right or wrong, that's what you're getting. It's my own understanding. And it's all tainted, it's all touched by my own ego, by my own samskaras, by my own stuff that I have in my memory. So you're getting the taste of all that. Okay. So now, what it's saying is that these three gunas that we talked about, okay, they can be categorized in these different categories of these statements that Imesh made here. Vishesha, avishesha, linga matra, alinga. The four words that he uses in Sanskrit. That means they are either very specific and non-specific, and then they have a pointer, and then they have a no pointer. What does that mean? This is a very loaded, very heavy pregnant statement. You have to understand a lot of things here to understand this statement. We have to go back to our 23 elements. Does everyone remember the 23 elements? Let me write down so you can. So the 23 elements are, what are the 23? Anybody remember? No? Intellect. Ego. Mind. Five sense perceptions. What are these? The sense of sight,
hearing,
sight,
hearing, touch,
taste, hearing, I can't write, hearing, touch, taste, what else?
Seeing. Oh, we got sight. Never mind.
Never. So five sense perceptions, then there are five sense organs. What are these?
Eyes, ears.
So I'm going to just write eyes,
ears. Skin.
What's the next one?
Skin.
Nose. And mouth? No, tongue. Five sense organs. Then we said five organs of action. What are these? Legs,
hands,
mouth.
Reproduction,
mouth. Tongue. Yes.
And elimination.
Repro and elimination. And then five, they're called great elements of
earth, wind, air, water, fire.
Earth, fire, water, air,
ether.
Okay. So these are called the 23, in English they call them evolutes, evolution, so they are called evolutes. See? So 23 evolutes of Prakriti. Before the evolution happened, the Prakriti is called the Mula or the Root Prakriti, Mula Prakriti or the Root Prakriti. When everything is balanced, all the gunas when they are balanced, Sattva, Rajas and Tamas, there is no manifestation. That's the original state of Prakriti, when there is everything is balanced, no more manifestation. Now, when the imbalance happens, manifestation happens. Now, this is all based on Sankhya philosophy. Okay, this whole concept is coming from Sankhya. So what they claim is that the first thing that gets, when there is imbalance in the Prakriti, the first thing that happens is intellect. That's at the very highest level. At the very subtlest level is the intellect. Okay? Then intellect gives rise to the ego. That's the next level, ego. And then the ego gives rise to the five sense perceptions and the mind. Okay? And the five sense perceptions, they give rise to the five great elements, elements of earth. Each element is associated with one of the senses. Does everyone know that? The earth is associated with which sense perception? Earth.
Touch.
No?
Earth is smell.
Smell.
earth. Water is?
Taste.
Fire is? Fire is sight. Sight. Air is?
Touch.
Now you can just... by elimination.
Right.
And ether is?
Hearing.
Okay, so these are the way, this is the way they kind of associate each of the five elements with one of the sense perceptions, because they say they are created by the sense perceptions, these five elements. Okay. So now, from the Mula Prakriti, from the very source of this creation, intellect was created. Right? Intellect. Right? So when you look at intellect, you can point to Prakriti as its being, its originator. So it has a pointer. Okay? Therefore it's called Linga Matra. So intellect is called Linga Matra because it only has a pointer to its originator. Alright? It doesn't have something beyond that. Prakriti has no more pointers. It's pure by itself. It's beginningless. It has no beginning, no end, and it is without any kind of a symbol, without any kind of mark, any pointer. Therefore, it's called Alinga. So Prakriti is called Alinga. That's the word he uses. Then intellect is called Linga Matra. Okay. Now, we said intellect has a source as well as, so it's like cause and effect, as they say. It has a cause and it has effects also. The effect of intellect is ego. Okay, so it has both cause and effect. Alright? So they are called avishesha. When you have cause and effect, they are called avishesha, non-specific, more general in terms of that. This is just how they are defined. Patanjali doesn't define anything. It is all the commentators, their job to tell us what these terms mean. Okay, this is how they define it. Avishesha. Okay? So anything that has a cause and it also has an effect, it's called avishesha. So ego, for example, has a cause. What's the cause of ego?
Intellect.
And what is the effect of, what are the kind of the subsets of, you know, or the dependence of this? Ego, mind, and the five sense perceptions. Okay, so it has six. I think I should have his slides. Let's go to that slide. So the 23 evolutes are a result of... So let's kind of go through these. Okay, that way, these are the notes that I have made. So remember the 23 evolutes? We talked about that. Do you want to quickly review the 23 evolutes? Go ahead.
Intellect.
Ego. Mind. Five sense perceptions, five organs of action, five elements, five organs of perception. Okay, so five sense perceptions, five organs of perception, five organs of action, they're called karma indriyas. Perceptions called jnana indriyas. You've heard these terms before. Okay. And then the pancha mahabhuta. Mahabhutas are the great elements, the earth, water, fire, etc. So these are the 23 evolutes. They are the result of primordial interaction of gunas and prakriti. So it's all a result of the gunas being unbalanced, imbalanced. So when there is balance, like I said, there is no manifestation, there is no evolution. Only when there is a subtle imbalance that happens, and mostly that imbalance represents rise in the value of rajas, because rajas is action, activity. You need activity for creation. Okay, so when rajas rises its head, becomes a little more powerful, creation happens. And first thing that gets created is the intellect. Okay, and the evolution happens from subtle to gross and from cause to effect, like I said. So intellect is the erlinga. Intellect is the linga matra. Prakriti is erlinga. And everything else either falls in the category of vishesha or avishesha. All these five elements and these 11 organs, 11 indriyas, they are called vishesha, because there is nothing beyond that. They cannot give rise to anything. Five elements, there is nothing beyond that. Organs of action, nothing beyond that. Organs of sense perception, nothing beyond that. Okay? Everyone get that? So they are vishesha. Five sense perceptions, they are vishesha, because the five bhutas, five elements came from them. Ego is vishesha, is avishesha. Everyone get the idea now? Mm-hmm. All right? Prakriti is the material.
Or material. Okay.
The two things, Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha and Prakriti, those are the two things which are eternal.
Okay.
Prakriti is this whole material being which is not Purusha.
Okay.
Purusha is the pure consciousness,
okay.
Atma, soul. So there's soul and there's non-soul. You can think of it that way.
Okay.
All right. So Vishesha, Avishesha, Linga Matra, Alingani, Guna Paravani. That's the statement here. That means these evolutes, which are nothing but evolution of gunas, they can be characterized into these categories. That's the whole statement here. Basically, all this statement, it's kind of giving a gist or essence of the Sankhya philosophy. So if you want to learn Sankhya philosophy, these two or three statements really dig into the very heart of Sankhya philosophy. Okay? You know, we have a study group also, Sutra study group, which meets at my house every month, twice a month. And we are right now doing the sutras, just the English translation of them. And we are hoping when we're done with that, which will be about a year, I think, from now, I would think so. Hopefully we'll be done in another 1 year, right? So. Looks like that.
Optimistically.
But then we want to take on the study of Sankhya philosophy. That's what the goal is. Study Sankhya philosophy. Because the whole yoga philosophy is based on that. That's the concept is to understand the source of this whole thing. Okay, so that's what the stages of these gunas are. Okay? Let's keep reading this. So what it says is, Vishesha or the specific are the final evolutes, no further effects, like I said, okay? The five Mahabhutas, they have nothing further that can be done beyond that. Avishesha have both cause and effect. Linga Matra is merely a pointer to the unmanifest Prakriti as its cause, and Alinga without pointer is the unmanifest Prakriti with no cause. It just is, okay? Prakriti is. There's no cause for it. Alright, everyone gets that? The five Visheshas, we just went over this, I'm just going to reread it just to reconfirm what we've just said. The gross elements, earth, water, etc., are evolved from the five avisheshas, the five tanmatras, the sense perceptions of smell, taste, etc. That's what we just said. Then the 11 visheshas, the five sense organs, and five organs of action, and the mind are the evolutes from ahankara or the ego. Okay? Intellect is linga matra, a mark or a pointer only, and has ahankara as its evolute or the effect. And the unmanifest prakriti is alinga, without a mark or pointer to another cause. Okay? Now, I must add that these are difficult concepts. You know, they are not easy to grasp. And you guys have just started doing this and you might find this very confusing and overwhelming. But trust me, once you understand these become very beautiful. You know, it really brings to light how the mind is structured, what is happening in the mind, etc. It's all about the mind eventually. And then you begin to realize a lot of things about the mind, how it functions and how it, you know.
So could you give like an example of how this would work in your thought process or something? Because, you know what I'm saying?
This is basically to understand how the gunas, they manifest themselves into these concepts of, you know, vishesha, avishesha, all these things. Thought process will come, when we come to the thought processes, they will be referenced somewhere or the other, in some form or the other.
I guess I'm just having
this trouble. Is structural.
I know, I'm having trouble seeing how it all.
This is all structural understanding of the concepts. Okay.
To me, what is most difficult is the unmanifest, the alinga, without a marker.
Without a marker. That's the prakriti. That's called mula prakriti, or the root cause, or the root cause of this evolution. And what they claim, again, there is really very little explanation given. In the Sankhya philosophy, all they say is that when everything is balanced, when the three gunas are perfectly in balance, and they don't even define what that balance means. But when they are in balance, that is unmanifest. That means there is no creation at that point.
Okay.
Creation happens only when there is imbalance.
Okay.
Again, very difficult concepts. Okay. Very difficult concepts. Like
but
I said,
then how can that be causing you a problem?
The unmanifest doesn't cause a problem. We are trying to.
Okay. I was interpreting that as a problem.
No, unmanifest doesn't cause a problem.
Okay.
Problem happens when there is manifestation.
Okay.
When there is ego, intellect and all that, that's where... Because what they say is the moment this evolution happens, the moment we start getting into it, we are born with this ignorance called avidya. That's beginningless. And there's no reason given for that. We are born with that ignorance called avidya, which means we are not... At that time, we're not sure who we are.
Okay.
We don't know.
Okay.
And that comes with our birth.
Mm-hmm.
That's how things are.
Yeah.
It's only through all this study and meditation and eight limbs of yoga that Patanjali says eventually you will become self-realized. When you're self-realized, you go back to unmanifest state, roughly.
Okay.
Because in the unmanifest state, there is no suffering. Yes.
Okay. That's starting to make more sense.
And this unmanifested is what we were talking about last week in the Ishvara.
In the where?
The Ishvara, the God conversation.
Yeah. Well, it's not related directly to that.
But it's symbolic?
Symbolic, yeah, in that sense. Yeah. Okay. So that is the prakriti or alinga state. Now, to further elaborate, you know, one of the commentators, his name is Taimni, he also relates and corresponds these four stages to different stages of samadhi. I'm going to skip on this one because this can take a whole hour by itself to go through these four stages of samadhi. Because we spent a lot of time on these four stages of samadhi when we were discussing meditation. So maybe it's not a good idea right now. See, that's our samskaras, right?
Good
samskaras, In your samskara, there is a fear embedded of spiders.
Yeah, my brother used to throw spiders at me.
No. Okay, so that's a fear that's embedded in our samskara.
That's the root.
That's the root.
Okay, so any event or any experience that resembles that, it's going to bring about the same.
Oh.
Were you showing a spider on her leg?
It was a fly. She mistook the fly for a spider.
I just looked down and it was crawling.
That's like the rope and the snake thing, right?
Right. Now, this is once you start analyzing these things, it makes us understand these concepts much better. This is all, the whole thing is related to your samskaras, your mind, your ego, your intellect, everything. You can analyze exactly what we have been doing here. Just this very simple experience.
I know, that's a simple fly.
It's a good way to understand this. It's a good way to understand our whole structure of the mind. Just by simple example of this spider. Spider, you know, like Laura said, snake in a... In a rope. Have all of you heard of that example? Snake in a rope.
Viparyaya.
Viparyaya. That's what it was. Totally viparyaya. Spider in a fly. Same thing. No difference. Okay. Number 20. Let's repeat the Sanskrit first. Drashta. Drishi matraha. Shuddhopi. Pratyaya. Anupashyaha. Okay, one more time. Drashta. Drishi matraha. Shuddhopi. Pratyaya. Anupashyaha. What is drashta? Drashta is the seer, observer, one who sees. That's drashta. Seer means, in this case, referring to soul, purusha, atma. Every time you see the word drashta, he is referring to the purusha or the atma or the soul or the self. Drashta. Drishi matraha. Drishi is the power of seeing, power of observation, power of awareness. Drishi matraha. So even though this purusha, this soul, is nothing but the power of awareness or the power of seeing, okay, and it's pure. Shuddhopi means it's pure. It's very pure and it's only the power of seeing. It's the power itself. But it is Pratyaya Anupashya. What is Pratyaya? Pratyaya is the content of the mind at any given time. And Anupashya means it's kind of following that. So again, these are very esoteric kind of meanings, you know. So what it's saying is that, look, this Purusha is pure. We know that. It is, in its true identity, it's very pure. Okay? It's very pure. And it is only the power, it's just a power of consciousness, nothing else, really. It's pure power of consciousness. But because it is entangled with the ego, okay, then it is because of that union with the ego, it is following the mind. Basically, what we're saying is that we're thinking that we are the mind, whereas we are not the mind. Whatever is happening in the mind is having an impact on us. All right? If I'm angry, I say I'm angry. We don't say my mind is angry. My mind is feeling a sense of anger. We don't say that. That's not the statement we make. We say I'm angry. Whereas if we realize that who we are, then all these statements will make a difference in the way we present them. Okay? So instead of saying I'm hot, you will not say, I am hot. You will say, my body is feeling the sense of heat. My body. So I am going to identify myself as something separate from my body. Okay? So, but that's not how we do it. We are identifying with the body, with the mind, with the thoughts that we have. That's just the way our language is structured now. That's how we are identified with it. Okay? So it is pure, but it appears that it is seeing through the mind. It appears that it is affected by the mind. It appears that it is completely impacted by what's going on in the mind. Okay? So the Patanjali, in the first couple of sutras, he talks about the drishya or the scene or the prakriti. And now he is focusing on the seer or the purusha. It's merely the power of seeing or the pure consciousness, as we said. And although it is pure, he observes the content of the mind through the intellect. Okay, so it's kind of entangled. Basically, what we're saying is, this whole purusha is entangled with the ego and the mind. Let's put it that way. It is not able to identify its own true identity of being independent. Okay? So that is this sutra. Now, but the commentators also say that purusha, you know, even though it is kind of entangled with it, that it thinks that it's the buddhi, or buddhi thinks it's the purusha, but they are separate. They are not the same. They are different from buddhi. Buddhi always mutates depending on the content. Mutates means it modifies itself. Okay, it goes through transformation. Buddhi goes through transformation. Buddhi is, like we said earlier, the purpose of buddhi is to support purusha. It's for the purpose of purusha, to provide it bhoga and apavarga. Those two statements we read, right? Bhoga was experience of the life, and apavarga was liberation. Okay? But purusha is all by itself. It's not for anything. It's just a pure observer. It's pure consciousness. Okay? So in that sense, it's different. Buddhi is inert. Remember, buddhi has no consciousness of its own. It is working on borrowed or reflected. The two terms these commentators use is either borrowed consciousness or reflected consciousness from the purusha. So that's what the buddhi and purusha are. But even though they are different, they has some apparent similarities. Purusha has some apparent, not real similarities, apparent. Due to the ignorance, cognition is attributed to buddhi, content of mind attributed to purusha. And purusha gets misidentified with the ego. We've been saying the same things over and over again. There is repetition over the same thing, okay? There is entanglement and misidentification of the buddhi and the purusha. So the next sutra is, again, let's read the sutra first. Tadartha eva drishyasya atma. Tadartha eva drishyasya atma. Okay. So tat here refers to the purusha, that tadartha. So the drishya is the prakriti or the scene. The purpose of prakriti is only to serve the purusha. Tat. Tat means that. Okay? It's a restatement in a different form of the same thing that was mentioned in the previous sutra. Almost exactly the same thing. There's no difference. All it's saying is that the prakriti exists only to serve the purpose of purusha. And those purposes are bhoga and apavarga. Again, with repetition of what we have said earlier. Bhoga and apavarga. So the basic nature of seeing or prakriti is to serve purusha with a life experience and liberation. Bhoga and apavarga. Same terms. Okay? And it's very similar to the previous sutra we just did, 218. It's prakriti and buddhi is intellect, needs consciousness of the purusha for all cognition, and purusha does not play any active role in cognition. Okay? Let's go on to the next one. Let's read the Sanskrit first. Kritartham prati. Nashtam api. Anashtam. Tadanya. Sadharanatvat. That's a long word. Sadharanatvat. Okay. So, kritartham prati. Nashtam api. Anashtam. Tadanya. Sadharanatvat. What does that mean now? So what is liberation? Liberation is?
Self-realization.
What is happening at that point?
No suffering,
plus no identification with the mind.
No attachment.
No attachments. No identification with mind and the intellect, right? What does that mean? That prakriti at that point, when there is no function, so prakriti has done its job. It has eventually done its job. It has first provided all the experiences of life, and finally, it has applied all this whole final concept of liberation to the Purusha. Purusha is now liberated. Purusha is now completely liberated and free, and it is totally, you know, at that point I know that my identity is only Purusha. I am not identified with my mind and body. I am liberated. So it has done its job, basically. Kritartham. That means its purpose is fulfilled. That's what kritartham means. Purpose has been fulfilled. Okay? Because nashtam means it has no significance anymore. It is destroyed, basically. The word it uses is destroyed, but you can use that term or some other term. But what basically it is saying is, look, Prakriti's job has been done for this Purusha. Now this, see, again, there is a concept in Sankhya that every Purusha is independent. It's unlike, you know, there are some other philosophies like Vedanta and all. They all say there is only one real God and everything else is a manifestation of that. In this Sankhya and Yoga philosophy, every Purusha is an individual entity. Every Purusha. So there's multitude of Purushas, only one Prakriti. Okay? And you are working with the same Prakriti, but multitude of Purushas. So now, this Prakriti for this particular individual, this particular entity of being, it has served its purpose. Right? That means now it has, in a sense, it has been destroyed. Destroyed means it has no more purpose to serve, no more job to do, no more function to perform. But what does that mean? Does it mean it is completely destroyed? What it is saying is, look, for this Purusha, it's done. So this Purusha doesn't need that Prakriti. But Prakriti will be needed for serving the purpose of other Purushas. That's all it is saying. You get the idea? I'm done for this Purusha, but I'm still available for other Purushas so that I can provide them with the bhoga and apavarga or experience and liberation eventually.
So are you talking about being available to other people or to
other people, yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's right.
Okay.
Good. We're saying Prakriti is common.
Okay. You know, I guess another thought that I had too was that you can be attached to a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you sever your attachment to one thing, you still have these other things you have to work on.
Right. Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
So
that's our day-to-day life. You
that's
know,
just how it is.
That's how it is, and we just need to keep working on our attachment so that eventually even the last trace of attachment is...
But that's not really what he's talking
no,
about.
No, this is okay. Much beyond
is,
that.
Okay.
This is the final stage of liberation.
Okay.
Having done the final state of liberation, now what we're saying is, now this Prakriti has done its job, and now but it's available for the other Purushas now. Still. Okay, so again, we'll read these notes quickly. Basic tenet of Sankhya philosophy is that there is a plurality of purushas and only a single prakriti, commonality of prakriti. Okay? And for liberation, prakriti needs to transcend the three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. We talked about that. Okay? That means they have to become completely balanced again. Then we will transcend. It's called trigunatita, or beyond the three gunas, transcending them.
And this is when karma ends, like the karma for that person ends.
Karma?
Karma.
Yeah.
The cause and the effect. Like for that
right.
Person.
Right.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah. So once that karma is fulfilled, then the balance will automatically appear of the three gunas. Right? So for liberated purusha, there is no entanglement with prakriti. That's what we've been talking about. Prakriti, however, continues to provide life experiences for the non-liberated purushas. Both purusha and prakriti are real and eternal. Not the same in Vedanta philosophy. That's what I just mentioned. Okay?
On that next to last one, when you say it continues to provide life experiences for the non-liberated.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you're liberated, you probably are still alive.
Yes.
So, I was kind of equating that to the prakriti, to what you have to do to your day-to-day existence.
That's a very good thought. Very good thought,
but
yes.
But obviously that's not exactly what it is, because you can become liberated while you're still go on living.
Right, absolutely, yes.
So it's not that simplistic.
It's not very simplistic, you're right. You can still continue to live even though you're liberated, because you have this karma that has been given to you. What it is saying is, at that time, the prakriti or the gunas do not play a role, because they are balanced now. So they do not cause pain or suffering or afflictions in the mind anymore. Now you are, you know, just plain dumb and happy, as you can think of. You know, fat, dumb and happy. Okay? That's basically what it is. At that point, nothing bothers you. There are no attachments. Nothing bothers you. So prakriti is not playing its real role. But you're still functioning. You still have the mind. You still have the intellect. You still need all those memories to function in life. You can still continue to be to work in a corporate factory or something, whatever. You know? All that is going to happen. But the prakriti is not going to play its ugly role as it has been in the past. Okay, so that's the okay. So I'm going to stop here. It's 4:15. All right. Any questions on so far? Anything that we can talk about briefly? It's a very heavy topic. This is the heaviest part of the Yoga Sutras, and you know, it's unfortunate that some of you came in at the point where it's the heaviest. When I say heavy, it's for me also, it is very difficult to understand these concepts. Very difficult.
So are you starting at the beginning again?
Yes.
In 2 weeks?
Whenever we finish this.
Oh, okay. So this is not the end.
No. Oh, okay. There are a few more sutras left.
Okay.
I think there are at least 6 to 8 sutras left.
Okay.
And then we'll have one session on just doing a total overview of the whole thing again. So I would think at least 3 at least. And then we'll see what we want to do.
Okay.
I can restart the whole thing. I think I remember last time what we did was we actually did we did 2 sessions on understanding the very essential messages of Bhagavad Gita. Does anybody remember that? That's what we did last time. Does anybody know what Bhagavad Gita is? Everyone knows a little bit. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard that word, but I don't really know what it means.
Okay. It's a text.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ancient text. So some of the people that we had in the class, they were interested in getting a very brief overview of the Gita. So that's what we did last time. And it depends on how we want to continue. If that's not of interest, we can just recycle this whole thing again. Okay. All right, everyone okay with that?